Welcome to the statewide conversation with Minnesota's Lieutenant Governor Peggy Flanagan, an opportunity to ask questions about Minnesota's response and plans during the COVID-19 pandemic. If you didn't get a chance to send or call in your questions this week, you can email covid@ampers.org or call 612-562-9895. I'm Heidi Holton, live from the KEXE studios on the Mississippi River in Grand Rapids, Minnesota. Thanks so much for listening today. We are teaming up with community radio stations throughout the state in partnership with Ampers, Diverse Radio for Minnesota Communities, and the Minnesota Broadcasters Association. We bring you COVID-19 information for the state of Minnesota, where you have a chance to ask questions of our elected officials. Lieutenant Governor Peggy Flanagan joins us now. Thanks for being back with us. A quick week for me. How about you?
Thanks so much, Heidi. Yes, I have lost all sense of time and space.
Yeah. Well, thank you for being back. I know people, we get calls, people really appreciate being able to ask questions and just get some clarity on what's going on in our world. We want to start out with a question today. I actually just saw a headline come from the Washington Post. Catholics and some Lutherans in Minnesota plan to buck their state's governor and reopen churches May 26th. That is like a question that we got this week that here's what they said. I know that the governor has been talking with faith leaders about the issue of when and how churches and other places of worship can open. They're wondering why the governor cannot just say, okay, go ahead and open. You are responsible for putting a plan in place and following through on it. Each person has to decide what kind of risk they are willing to take based on their own vulnerabilities. Why can't the governor just let the churches and places of worship handle this and deal with the consequences?
Well, very broadly, Heidi, I would say this. You know, as a person of faith myself, one of the things that I take seriously, and I think the governor takes seriously, is that I am my brother's keeper. And, you know, one of the ways that we can keep folks safe is, you know, by being very intentional about how we work in partnership with our faith community to figure out how to safely reopen. You know, what we continue to hear from the CDC, as well as from epidemiologists and health experts, is that, you know, we need to have really three things as we're looking at reopening in environments. And the first is, how close are you to other people? For how long are you in close proximity to other people? And what types of activities can be done? And what's the predictability of those settings? So breaking news, Heidi, just got off a call with our faith leaders with some of our faith leaders in Minnesota, and had a really important conversation. That conversation is ongoing as to how we can best partner to determine you know, how to move forward. I do think that, you know, people's overall spiritual well-being, you know, has been impacted in many ways by the COVID pandemic. And one of the ways that people have been impacted is by their inability to, in many ways, to worship in community. So, you know, we are thinking through that and being very thoughtful about it. But the reality is, we need people to continue to be safe. And even when, you know, the listener said that we could, you know, just leave it up to the churches and to people to make those decisions, I think what is also true is, when people go into church, then they leave church and they go back into community. And, you know, that can also have an impact that we are then responsible for after they leave their church or their synagogue or their mosque. And we want to be thoughtful and do this in partnership with our faith leaders. I think we can get there. We're not quite there yet, but we're working on it.
Okay. And speaking of breaking news, we did have another question about the Minnesota State Fair, but I think they just decided that the fair will be canceled this year as well. They were asking who makes that decision.
So I heard that breaking news, and no one is a bigger fan of the Minnesota State Fair than I am. I'm going to say not even the governor is his biggest fan. He's like number two. This is where we switch around. I'm number one and he's number two. But, you know, and I'll be honest, the decision that the state fair board made today is simultaneously devastating because it is one of my favorite things to do in Minnesota, and really I think is truly the best of us. But also know that I also am somewhat relieved because, you know, we don't call it the Great Minnesota Get Together for nothing. We all know the iconic photos of just seas of people. And what we continue to hear is being in close proximity to others is what really leads to spikes of infection. And we simply, you know, they made this decision, and I'm grateful that they did because, you know, we have hundreds of thousands of people coming together. The rate or spike of infection and our inability to be able to respond to that with ICU capacity, hospitalization, and getting people the care that they need is tremendously troubling to me. So, and I guess I'd remind people that the last time that the state fair was canceled, it was during the polio epidemic. So there is a precedent that we look out for the health and well-being of Minnesotans when it comes to conducting the state fair. But I will tell you, you know, I will be first in line when the state fair determines that they can safely reopen to get some mini donuts and ride the sky ride and visit all the vendors that we look forward to every single year. This is a difficult decision, but I believe that the state fair board who met today made the right decision.
Yeah, and there's all the people come from all over the state to go to that and stay in hotels, and there's such unpredictability on people being together.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. And I would break my heart if people would come together at the fair and then bring COVID-19 back to their communities, where we've been very intentional about the hospital capacity all across the state and by region. And I would be very worried that would be thrown off and impacted in a negative way.
Yeah. Well, let's move on. We also heard in the news this week about Minneapolis Mayor Jacob Frey signing an emergency regulation requiring people in the city to wear a face mask or covering when they're indoor stores, hotels, government buildings. Itasca County has had an increase in COVID-19 positive tests. They're also now officially advising this or more strongly doing that. But some people are not responding well, like the person we heard from this week. They view this as government overreach and that these cloth masks do not protect in the way that a health workers and PPE protects. So it's no guarantee of safety. They want to know what you think of action by cities and how do you think government leaders should balance people taking personal responsibility for themselves versus government taking responsibility?
Sure. So I appreciate this question, and I'd first like to address the piece on cloth masks versus the masks that are used by healthcare workers. The listener's right that cloth masks are not as effective as the N95 masks that are used by our healthcare workers at protecting the wearer from COVID-19. And we are facing a shortage of N95 masks and other protective equipment. So that equipment absolutely needs to be reserved for healthcare workers and our frontline workers to keep them safe. Cloth masks, though, serve a little bit of a different purpose than the professional equipment used by healthcare providers. If you're positive for COVID-19, but asymptomatic, you don't know that you have it, you can still spread the virus. So wearing a cloth mask reduces the risk that you might get someone else sick. And there's a world of difference between some protection and no protection at all. So just because it's not 95% or 99% effective doesn't mean we shouldn't wear it. My mask protects you and your mask protects me. And widespread mask wearing reduces the spread of the virus. And it is one way that we can care for each other. Now, if I was just the only person who is impacted, that might be, you know, might be a good reason. But I'm not. If I'm going out into the public, I have responsibility for my fellow Minnesotans. And our relationships with cities and with local governments are super important to our administration. And we're really grateful for our mayors and local governments that have helped us, to help keep their communities safe by supporting statewide public health guidance and bringing forward the specific needs that they need, for their own communities to keep folks safe. So we know that the spread of the virus feels different in different regions and different communities across the state, but we can't be complacent. We are staring down a peak that is still several weeks out in Minnesota, and it's important that we continue to do all we can to be ready for when that peak comes. Local governments are really a key piece of highlighting that in communities. And Heidi, when I am out in public and around other people, I am wearing a mask, and I would ask my fellow Minnesotans to do the same thing.
Yeah, I think I want to remember the line that you said there about there's a world of difference between no protection and some protection. I think that's a really good way to think about it. Because people are facing this within their families. Some people are not wanting to wear it and other people are wanting to wear it. And it's getting tougher because we've been in this for a long time now.
That's right. And I this past week had an opportunity to have a conversation with a young mom who has a two-year-old at home who works in a local convenience store. And, she expressed to me that she is afraid to go to work every day, but needs to be able to provide for her little one. And so, she talked about the fact that she wears a mask at work, and sometimes people give her a hard time about it, her customers. And there are customers who are coming in and not wearing masks. And, I just think for this mom who is working as hard as she can to provide for her family, again, the least we could do to show respect to her, she comes in contact with hundreds of people every day, is to wear a mask.
Yeah, you're listening to a statewide conversation with Minnesota's Lieutenant Governor, Peggy Flanagan. So this week we heard from one of our producers for Minnesota Native News. At Wednesday's news conference, Governor Walz was asked about communication with tribes regarding reopening casinos. Mystic Lake is going to open on May 26. I know the Boys Fort Band is opening up as well. And Walz mentioned that in the ongoing conversations with tribal leaders, we're actually learning from them because they have had experts come in and look at their spaces. And so they want to know what does it take? What can you do in a casino? Because obviously those would be things that make us nervous, not predictable, how much time you spend there and all of that. So they're wondering if you can speak more to these conversations, what's being discussed and what are you learning from tribal and casino leaders?
Yeah, absolutely. So, the governor and I have really valued our partnership with the tribes across the state, and we have worked really hard to improve the government-to-government relationships that we have with them since we stepped into office. When the governor issued Executive Order 2004 closing restaurants and bars and places of public accommodation on March 16th, we knew that we couldn't order the tribes to close their businesses or their enterprises. But within a week, and again, for your listeners, if they need to know, right, that our tribes are have tribal governments. They are our sovereign nations, and we cannot direct them as to how to operate their own enterprises. But within a week of issuing that executive order, all 11 nations closed their casinos and businesses because they really understood the need to flatten the curve and to give the state and tribes more time to build a response to COVID-19. Since March 19th, our office has held daily calls with our tribal leaders in order to support each other and collaborate on the state tribal response to COVID-19. The tribes all respected Minnesota's stay-at-home order, and many issued their own orders based on the unique and individual needs of the communities that they represent. And so we respect tribes' authority and will not challenge their authority to protect their own communities. Now, as the state has begun to reopen, many of our tribes are implementing their own plans to reopen their businesses, including their casinos. So in the plans that have been shared with us, we're learning how tribes are following the CDC and Minnesota Department of Health guidelines in consideration of health and safety of their guests and employees. They're making really careful decisions about occupancy limits, social distancing controls, health screening for both staff and guests, the use of masks for staff, and making masks available for their guests, limiting movement, the cleaning and sanitation protocols throughout their facilities, and changes to the operations for food. So as elected leaders of their nation, the tribal leaders are facing many of the same challenges that the governor and I face as we make decisions on how to protect our communities and, you know, respond to COVID-19. We're learning from each other and we're supporting each other in ways as this is a completely unprecedented moment that we find ourselves in, and we're very grateful for our relationships. So, you know, as you mentioned, Shakopee Mdewakanton Sioux community is reopening, Mystic Lake, the Upper Sioux community has already reopened their facility, and I know that other tribal leaders have visited with them about how things are going. So, you know, we're monitoring it closely, but again, we know that our tribal leaders, as they make decisions, are thinking very much about the safety and health of their people, and the governor and I support them in that.
We reported earlier on the opening soon of the Fortune Bay Resort Casino, like I said, in the Boys Fort Band, and mm-hmm. a lot of, you know, that's the largest employer in that area. Also, something they decided to be healthy was they're no longer going to allow smoking in the casino. So that mm-hmm. was good to hear as well.
Yeah, and I think, you know, and Chairwoman Cheevers and the leaders of Boys Fort, when they shared that information with us, they said, you know, this is also based on a public health decision that we know that smoking and COVID-19 and the just ability for the virus to spread, they don't go well together. And so that is one of the reasons why they made that decision. And also, just to be very clear, you know, tribes and their enterprises are a critical part of the economy across Minnesota, but in particular in Greater Minnesota, for the employment of Native and non-Native folks across the state. So, you know, we know that they will be cautious in their reopening. And again, I will simply reiterate, we are not South Dakota. And we really value our partnership and relationships with the tribes, and we'll continue to support them in determining what is best for their own people.
We heard this week from Brenda from Grand Rapids. She had a question about visiting her grandchildren. She said, even though there was a change in the stay-at-home order to allow small groups with continued social distancing, she is seeing others return to face-to-face time without social distancing with their grandkids. She said she and her husband are in their 60s, no health problems. Their three grandkids live about an hour and a half away. They're retired, and they, you know, they only go shopping once a week, and on three different occasions they've gone to visit but have been outside and more than 6 feet apart from them. And so she wants your advice on if one grandchild visiting alone at her home overnight might be better than the three of them using social distancing. Their goal, she said, is to perpetuate safety. Would they go between feeling frustrated, angry, a bit depressed with our loneliness? And she said, we live by your and the governor's expertise, and we're grateful for our Minnesota leadership. Thank you.
Oh, Brenda, this is so hard. And, you know, I will say this, my mom and I are so incredibly close. And this has been, I'm getting a little emotional here.
Yeah.
This has been one of the hardest parts of the pandemic. And Brenda, it is clear that you are feeling it too. I usually visit with my mom multiple times a month. My daughter, her granddaughter, her best buddy, usually stays over at least once a week at grandma's house. And we haven't been able to do that for over 2 months. And it is heartbreaking. And for Mother's Day, we visited my mom, and she, by a distance, as she was up on the balcony, and we were one floor below, and just, waved and did air hugs, and it is so hard. So, I wanted to say, I wish I could tell you, and thank you so much for listening to the guidance, and I wish I could tell you that it was okay. But our guidance continues to be, that we need to not do overnights and to be as careful as possible. And as we are reopening, cautiously reopening more businesses and increasing social interaction, we're still asking folks to stay close to home when possible. When socializing with people outside of your home, you should still wear masks and social distance. And as we open more things up, the reality is we expect to see more cases and community spread. And unfortunately, that makes overnight visits more risky, not less, even if everyone is doing the best that they can at social distancing. And so, Brenda, I am my heart is with you because I am feeling the same thing. I'm just sending you the absolute best to you and your family and your grandchildren and hope that you can all be safely together soon. We are just not at a point where I feel comfortable giving you that recommendation.
Yeah. Well, before we go, we heard this week from a person who works at an organization that supports people with disabilities. They said you and the governor are doing a lot to ensure information is getting out to Native and Indigenous as well as communities of color. But one very high-risk group that doesn't seem to be getting much attention is the disability community. Like the elderly, many have underlying health conditions. They have personal care assistance coming in and out of their home, easily spreading the disease. What is the administration doing to educate and protect the disability community?
Sure. I really appreciate that question. So our administration has been working in close communication with the disability community, including people living with disabilities, their family members, caregivers, advocacy groups, and providers. The Minnesota Department of Human Services under Commissioner Jody Harpstead is convening regular meetings and doing their best to gather input from people who are on the front lines about what is happening in their individual communities. And one of the goals is certainly to balance the individual rights of people with disabilities with health and safety. And so just having a disability is not in and of itself a risk factor for COVID-19. And so a really person-centered approach has been important to the Department of Human Services. Several of the Department of Human Services' emergency powers have been focused on delivering services to people with disabilities differently. So, for example, like that could look like providing services remotely or waiving requirements for in-person assessments. DHS has also acted to prevent anyone from losing their coverage through our public health care program during the pandemic, including medical assistance for employed persons with disabilities. It's really important right now that we provide flexibility in our programs so that people can continue to receive services and maintain those critical connections. And DHS has created a website, and so just want to make sure that folks can also access that because I think it's helpful. The website is specifically aimed at disability services, including COVID-19, that has a lot of answers, questions and answers that the agency is hearing from providers of services for people with disabilities so that they can have resources close at hand. But I would just also say this to your listener, we can do a better job, I think, across our administration of making sure that people with disabilities are seen, heard, and valued, not just as our response to COVID-19, but overall.
Well, before we go, I wondered if you might address the 2020 graduates and the parents of graduates. We're beginning to hear that, you know, many are, it's a tough time for them. They're not happy. They're not going to be able to celebrate the way in which they expected. But like some bars this week in Minnesota, we're starting to hear some rumblings that some are want to go ahead with some sort of in-person ceremonies not sanctioned by the schools. It's a tough time for them. So what would you say?
I would first of all say congratulations on all of your incredible hard work that led you to this moment. The state, and I know your families and communities are really, really proud of you. And I know that this, your senior year is not anything like you would have imagined it to be, and you were really cheated out of a lot of milestones by this terrible virus. My hope and my sense is that this will leave you stronger and ready to take on the uncertain path that lays before you. But I also would say that, you know, the desire to take selfies and hug your friends and really truly celebrate this moment could be very overshadowed by the spread of infection and someone becoming ill because of that moment of celebration. And would say that we have heard of a few communities who have gone rogue, so to speak. And in one particular incident, there was someone who actually had COVID-19 who spread it to other folks. And so now that community is struggling, frankly. So we are aware of just like the real incredible loss that people are feeling, and I am deeply sorry that folks are experiencing this. And ultimately, the responsibility of the governor and lieutenant governor is to keep people healthy and safe. And we just couldn't come up with a way to be able to do that by bringing folks together. Now, there's guidance on other ways to do it: drive-through graduations, ways to celebrate each other, to get innovative and creative. And we certainly encourage people to do that.
Well, Ed, I'm remembering our conversation last week. You said, don't be jerks. And I think that applies here again.
Yeah. And just, you know, as Minnesotans, we take care of each other and we get through things. And this is just another one of those moments. And don't be a jerk.
Yeah. That's Minnesota's Lieutenant Governor Peggy Flanagan. Your time is very appreciated. Thank you so much for talking with us again.
Thank you so much, Heidi. And I wish you and all of your listeners a healthy and safe Memorial Day weekend.
Same to you. Thank you.
Thank you.
This broadcast is a collaboration of community radio stations throughout the state, partnership with Amper's Diverse Radio for Minnesota Communities, and the Minnesota Broadcasters Association. Listen to the full conversation at kaxe.org. And don't forget, if you want to ask a question of Peggy Flanagan, email covid@ampers.org or call 612-562-9895. I'm Heidi Holton for KAXE, KBXE. Thanks for listening.